Hey John, thanks for coming on SaaS Video Hour today. I'm excited to chat about Ghost and what's up next for Ghost in the next few weeks.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So CMSs, content management systems, often have somewhat weird names. You've got Drupal, you've got Squarespace, WordPress, I guess, slightly makes sense. Where did Ghost come from? What's the story behind the name Ghost?
It's a good question. I used to work on the design team at WordPress, and a lot of the inspiration for Ghost came from frustrations of increasingly bloated UI in WordPress and not being able to do much about it. So, in envisioning rebuilding WordPress from the ground up and creating a publishing platform people would love rather than hate, the idea was that the UI should fade into the background, disappear, not really be there, get out of your way as much as possible. And so, Ghost felt like a good metaphor for that.
Oh, fun. Okay, I like that. Right. So it's a disappearing UI, which fits very well
Exactly.
with the writing interface on Ghost today. I feel like Ghost originally caught my eye with the Kickstarter with this beautiful dashboard. And of course, at the time I was using WordPress and we had this old install with all these plugins that was just terrible. And Ghost looked like this breath of fresh air with this beautiful dashboard that would put everything together. And then over time, it seems like it changed into more of a focus on a clean writing UI, all the interface disappearing, and you can just focus on your words. And more recently, Ghost is more of a tool to build a subscription publishing business. So I'm curious, how has the way you see Ghost and its opportunities changed over time?
Yeah, that's a great one. I think when Ghost got started, which was way back in 2013 now, making a nice writing UI was unique for a short space of time. There was Medium, there was us, and there wasn't much else. But within the space of a couple of years, that no longer became a unique selling point. And the problem of publishing in a nice, clean way on the web was largely solved. So we kind of started looking at what are the bigger problems that we could take on. What are the things people actually care about? What do they really want? And the thing we came back to again and again was people were trying to figure out how to make money from sites, how to make it sustainable, how to make a living from their writing work. And the ad model was already declining at that point and has gotten far worse now. So in about 2015, we started really thinking about memberships and subscriptions. And being a small team, it took us a long time to get there. But launched in beta last year, and the next couple of weeks will be pulling Ghost 4.0 with everything fully launched and available to everyone. But of course, at this point, the industry has changed, and now subscriptions and memberships are about as the new Snapchat stories. It feels like everyone's adding them, but yeah, we took a little longer.
You were fairly quick to it. You've had subscriptions for what, 2 years now? Maybe a year and a half?
Year and a half, yeah.
Year and a half. Okay, cool. And I'm curious, do you have any stats you can share about how common is that for people who are publishing with Ghost today to run subscriptions versus just publishing a standard blog?
Yeah, it's still a minority segment of our total audience, but it's the fastest growing segment by far. We're beyond thousands of publishers with hundreds of thousands of revenue per month. We're coming up on Ghost publisher revenue surpassing Ghost's own revenue pretty quick. I think that'll happen either next month or the month after, which of course is the famous Bill Gates definition of a platform, is when people making money with the platform surpasses the economic value of the platform itself. That's the traditional platform definition.
Right, that's incredible. Which I think often in almost the Bill Gates sense of the term, it's referring to developers building on the platform with plugins and well, themes in the sense of a content management system with Windows, it would have been software. But here you're seeing creators basically monetize directly the stuff they're creating. They're able to write or interestingly enough, I noticed Ghost website today I was looking and it's even emphasizing like building even a video site if you wanted to, right? Where you could host videos and put them behind a subscription.
Yeah,
And
creators in general is a broad segment, and video creators is certainly a big part of it, as well as podcasters.
when people are doing that, are they hosting the videos on Ghost or is that typically just posting them, say, on YouTube unlisted?
Yeah, YouTube unlisted, which is effectively the same strategy used on Patreon. You really can't go get better than YouTube for streaming video still, no matter what you do. So it's kind of pointless to try and host videos anywhere else, but the unlisted setup works well.
Interesting. Yeah. So you've been running a paid newsletter on your own, sort of, I guess, dogfooding a bit of Ghost features there. How has that worked out for you? Could you imagine going Bim Thompson and doing content full time?
You know, I could if I wasn't doing so many other things at the same time. Like you say, part of the motivation for doing it is dog fooding and testing the product ourselves. But another part of it is that I miss, and I think a lot of people who are early to tech miss, the olden days of when we all used to blog and that was fun. And part of the reason people don't do that so much anymore is because there are other tools and social networks available now, like Twitter, which are faster and more accessible to reach an audience. But another part of it is this feeling of what I call just creativity being stifled by the public sphere of the internet being too large. It used to be that publishing something online would reach a small but interested and generally curious audience, whereas now it feels like almost no matter what you publish, someone's going to try and cancel you for it or tear you down for having any sort of opinion about anything. And from the personal blogging point of view, putting a newsletter or a blog behind a paywall creates a not a private space, but just a smaller space. It creates a smaller, more engaged space with an audience where you can write and create more intimately and get more direct feedback on your work in a way that's very reminiscent of blogging in 2006, 7, 8, 9 versus 16, 17, 18, 19.
That's very interesting. So you see part of the benefit of subscription content as being actually that it's more closed, that it's sort of available to not the entire web, but just the people who really care about what you're writing.
Yeah, smaller. The 1,000 true fans model, I think, is a really good parallel.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. I tend to think of it as basically more of the supporting side, right? Of being able to sponsor essentially a writer that you care about and that you want to see more content from them. But I hadn't thought of that in the sense of almost creating a safe space. How do you find that works with basically stuff that you want to share with the broader world? How do you balance that? When you write stuff, do you feel like you have an urge to basically get a larger audience, or do you feel like you're more or less happy with keeping that smaller audience?
I love the small audience, and I would call it a small space rather than a safe space, because no one should be free from having their opinions critiqued, but having a barrier to entry for that to happen can be a positive thing. I think Ben Thompson really nailed the model in terms of, you know, growing the audience versus growing the business. And he always says, you know, you make your best content free. His free newsletter per week is the most broadly read, or the thing that most people would be interested in. And the other four newsletters every week are usually much deeper dives into more niche content that the majority of people would be less interested in. And I think the same can kind of apply more broadly to video creators, podcasters. Usually making some stuff free and having that be the top of funnel draw with the really broadly applicable content that everyone wants to see is a great way to get people in the door. And the true fans, the people who are really interested in the long tail stuff, can convert to paying audience. So if there's something I want to reach a big audience, I'll use Twitter and I'll make it a free post. And if there's something I want to write about more openly, more freely, the paid post model works great.
So then does that make the new, what are they calling it? Super follow, right? On Twitter, the new upcoming paid follows. That makes that to a certain degree competing with this model, right? Where Twitter itself could end up owning that paid audience of your publishing almost those more quick thoughts to a private audience.
Yeah, totally. It'll be interesting to see if they make that model compatible or interoperable with external platforms. We had some conversations with Twitter's product team mid last year, when they were kind of looking into that, and that was one of the things they mentioned being curious about. I think most of that call was acquisition, shopping, and review ended up being the target, but it sounds like they have longer term plans for how they want that ecosystem to play out. But Twitter's always been very good at talking about things it wants to do and not so good at executing on them. So as far as I know, super followers as yet, sole and complete scope of it is one screenshot. So, you know, call me when they ship something. I'm very interested in it. I think it's a fantastic idea, but Twitter does not have a track record where I'm going to give them a free pass and saying they've done a great job just yet.
Right. Yeah, makes sense. So sticking on subscriptions for one more question, I'm curious, what's your feel on subscription fatigue? Do you feel like people end up maxing out the amount that they want to spend on content subscriptions? You've got obviously streaming video and music and all those on the commercial side, but then now that we're paying for content from individual creators, where do you see that sort of tapping out and Is there, I guess, more of a space for, what do they say, you make money by unbundling or rebundling? And is there a space for sort of bundling content back together?
It's a great one because the, you know, the old saying, history doesn't repeat itself, but if you look back far enough, you can often see the patterns. People have been predicting subscription fatigue since, I don't know how far back, but I'm sure if you went back to the 40s, 50s, 60s, you'd find people saying that about newspapers, just like they were saying reading was depriving kids of the of their attention spans when books first started being printed. The reality is subscription fatigue has always been an economic theory that has yet to pan out. In the same arguments are made by people who don't have subscriptions every single time. We saw this in software. Adobe said for years, subscriptions are bad, they're terrible, people don't want subscriptions, they just want to buy software. And then lo and behold, when Adobe moved to subscriptions, the most transformative thing they ever did for their entire business. And so software and SaaS has had this argument for 10 years. We never saw subscription fatigue. The convenience always outweighed the number of subscriptions. I see the same pattern repeating in content. It's this argument which is used as a bludgeon by, at the moment, people who sell ebooks and info products who are desperate not to lose their multi-level marketing campaigns. And I think it kind of solves itself. The reality is no one is going to have 100 different paid newsletters they subscribe to, but everyone might have five, and those five might only overlap by one. And the more niches there are, just the more deep you can go on specific interests. So I think that solves itself. I do think we eventually get to a place where we start bundling again. So if this is unbundling and people setting up their own individual things, we probably will eventually get to a place where there's some kind of bundle service that pulls things together. But I think we're years away from a critical mass. I think being early is worse than being right on that one, because bundled products without sufficient demand are destined to flop.
Yeah, one I had thought would be interesting, and it never quite worked as well as I wanted, was Blendle, which was trying to bundle newspapers, though without a subscription. It was doing the micropayments, and you paid a few cents per article. And yeah, so I don't know, it never stuck for me.
That picked two failing models at the same time, which was kind of a staggering achievement. It took micropayments and bundling something for which there was no demand and packaged them together into one convenient thing that nobody wanted. And I think the Brave browser is kind of the tech equivalent of that. Micropayments are just a horrible concept that every premise starts out with. If only credit card networks would let you pay a few cents at a time, this would be a viable model. But the reality is it's a thing that nobody wants. It's the 3D TV of online commerce. It's just not a thing. It's like, okay, great. It kind of works. It's a bit of an annoying experience, and there's never going to reach a scale where this becomes a real thing, but let's keep talking about it. So I think those, maybe one day we'll get some sort of critical mass where crypto powers something in the underlying tech that happens, but I don't see it becoming a consumer-facing thing that everyone is aware of and excited about.
I was going to say, crypto will solve it, they say, and then you end up with multi-thousand dollar NFTs instead. So,
yeah, that's pretty amazing. It's incredible how quickly we moved on from Clubhouse to NFTs. That's like a record turnaround for the hype cycle.
The attention span of the internet is getting shorter and shorter, I think.
It is. I've started keeping a list entitled Things I Don't Give a Fuck About This Week, and NFTs is top of that list currently. It was Clubhouse last week. We'll see what's next.
We'll probably be on to something else by Friday.
Yeah.
So moving on from subscriptions, one thing I wanted to ask you about before we talk about what's next for Ghost is the business model around open source software. So once again, it is subscriptions to a certain degree. The business model for open source software has often been either the Red Hat model of sort of selling a service, more or less, where you're selling support for the software, or then things like what Ghost is doing today, where you're selling a hosted version of the service while maintaining the open source project that powers that. Could there be a better paid model for open source than running a SaaS version of the same stuff? Or is this sort of the paid newsletter version for open source that just works, it just manages to fit?
There has to be a better model. If for no other reason than the model Ghost has is almost impossible to replicate. The vast majority of open source projects are not products. They are libraries, and libraries don't work. You know, you install them via NPM, you don't have a hosted version of them traditionally. And there's just not a comparable kind of hosted, self-hosted version of that. There's drawbacks to both sides. Being an open source product, there's a lot of drawbacks because you have tons of demand from non-technical users who can't and won't contribute to the code base, whereas library doesn't usually have that problem. But you do have the advantage of the business model. I'm really encouraged by GitHub sponsors and some of the evolution there, though it needs much, much more. I would like to see GitHub sponsors integrated, ideally into Git itself, whereby people, depending on a package, can actually kind of pay for it with a recurring subscription as long as they're using it. I think that would be a really good model. Open Collectives, another one doing interesting things, but it needs to be a tight integration. There's some other models which I'm curious about. There's kind of open core and then paid add-ons, and then there's closed core with open add-ons. So closed core with open add-ons would be like Atom editor. GitHub had a closed core and then lots of open extensions. And open core with paid add-ons is like WooCommerce, where you have one open source plugin for WordPress, but then you have lots of paid services that can be bolted onto the outside to make it do more, like shipping gateways and payment gateways. Those, I think, are getting more interesting as we see the advent of serverless functions and decentralized apps, not just decentralized networks, and services get smaller and smaller to the point where an app could be constructed of a set of completely independently hosted APIs deployed anywhere in the world. I think that starts to open up some interesting possibilities, but it's going to take a while to see which ones catch on.
Interesting, yeah. Okay, back to Ghost. What's next for Ghost? I think you've mentioned that Ghost 4 is coming right around the corner in a few weeks. What are the things that we should be excited about coming in with that?
Yeah, big time. So a year and a half ago, we released memberships and subscriptions in beta in Ghost, which works great. It's been used to make millions of dollars in production by thousands of sites. In fact, we've got Yuri in the chat who runs the browser, which is one of the biggest publications running on Ghost today. And up until now, that has required some amount of developer knowledge to kind of make a custom theme and set up a few different APIs and bits and pieces to get things working. So it hasn't been the most user-friendly experience, but that's part of the beta. And Ghost 4.0, the big headline is everything's out of beta. There'll be no code knowledge required. We're having a bit of a design refresh and a lot of things getting much easier. So you will be able to, in the space of a couple of clicks, set up a new Ghost site with a brand new paid publication, newsletter, community, full-blown authentication, and have your own independent version of a commercial paid site up and running in a very short space of time, and something that you really own. That's the thing that we're trying to get people to understand, is owning your technology, owning your data, owning your payment information, owning your customers. That's the long-term play where you end up with a business that you control the destiny of. A lot of these payment things like Twitter and Substack and all the social networks are fun, but if you don't own the tech at the end of the day, they are going to disappear sooner or later. They are going to change things sooner or later, and then you're left holding the pieces at the end. So that's the big advantage of open source, and making it easier is the headline of 4.0.
That's awesome. And that's where you're doing payments through Stripe still, right?
Yeah. Yep. Heavily integrated with Stripe.
Are there any other payment options for countries and regions where Stripe isn't available?
Yeah. So at the moment, you can do it. It does go back to needing a little developer knowledge. You can integrate via API with any external payment gateway. And there's a few hoops to jump through, but it's entirely possible. In future, we'd like to have more native integrations with things like Paddle, and potentially crypto down the road as well, because there's a bunch of business types which credit card networks don't support that are perfectly valid, and crypto would be a good solution to those.
Awesome. And for people who aren't running a subscription, what's new beyond the design refresh in Ghost 4?
A lot of streamlining of everything in terms of performance, in terms of design, in terms of how things work. Everything. It's kind of a laundry list of long changes of things people have been asking for and things that we've been wanting to get done. But if you stay tuned in about 2 weeks' time on Product Hunt, or you'll probably see it on Twitter, you'll get the long list of what's included.
That'll be awesome. So for listeners today, the best place to follow you is at Ghost on Twitter, right?
Yep, at Ghost on Twitter. I'm at John O'Nolan, and if you want to check out the site, it's ghost.org.
Awesome, John. Thank you so much. This has been awesome. It's been great chatting with you today. Looking forward to trying out Ghost 4 when it lands. I presume it'll just launch in 2 weeks directly for everyone who's hosted on your hosted service, right?
That's it. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, then our blog will be on it in a couple weeks. Thank you so
much. Looking forward to it. Cheers.
Bye.